Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
All right. Kevin, what is this podcast?
What is the podcast? I don't know.
It's a collection of words.
I don't know. Every time I say sci-fi is a podcast where blah, 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 blah. And then I suddenly realized I didn't come up with anything. So I figured I'd stick somebody else with it this week.
Let's ask our guest star, the refrigerator.
It's a podcast where three glorious entities discuss awesome things in awesome ways.
Perfect.
How did we become glorious?
Through glory.
By saying so, it makes it
happen. Did we win a Hugo?
We did not. However, we did come in close proximity to a number of them.
We've won a future Hugo.
We've won a future Hugo.
In a timeline.
It's like a Hugo future. Maybe people should give us money in exchange for a timeshare and Hugo in the future.
Is coming close to a Hugo award winner, like, you know, being Icarus?
I prefer to think of it as Daedalus.
So lit on fire to...
That's prove. The other one.
Oh. Well, they both have fire, right?
Only the one that flew up close to the sun had fire, by which we mean that the wax in his wings melted.
Oh, I'm confusing it with Prometheus. Sorry.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Icarus flew up to the gods to steal fire, and then his wings melted because he's an idiot and decided to make wings out of wax. Wax.
It's so easy to work wax, though.
Which is surprisingly flammable.
Yes. Okay. And all of this straight in the bin.
How British of you.
Exactly. All right. So
let's crack on.
Let's crack on indeed with crack.
The Kraken.
That's later. So this week we are discussing Leviathan Wakes by James S.A. Corey. From the back of the book, 200 years after migrating into space, mankind is in turmoil. When a reluctant ship's captain and washed-up detective find themselves involved in the case of a missing girl, what they discover brings our solar system to the brink of a civil war and exposes the greatest conspiracy in human history. So they finally find out who killed Kennedy.
Who killed JR?
Well, he was just shot. He wasn't killed.
What do you mean? What's the definition of killed then?
Being dead afterwards.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that thing up. Well,
all right. We're coming back after kind of a long break, so we're going to be a little bit out of practice.
I think I call it rare form.
Rare form, as yes. In completely uncooked.
Medium rare, or, yes. Okay.
Black and blue.
So, Kevin, what did you think of this book?
I actually liked it.
Which is a surprise to everyone.
I know it's hard to believe.
Where's the qualifier?
Well, we had read this before we started actually doing the podcast form of our gestalt, whatever it is, where we read books. And I was thinking, oh, God, we're going back and rereading these books. That's going to be painful. But actually, I was like, oh, hey, it was actually pretty good. The funny thing was, I don't think I would have actually gone back and ever read it again. But when I did, I was like, wow, I actually like this better than I thought I would, because I only kind of remembered, you know, her ship flying around and some weird Akira ending, basically.
Spoiler free reviews.
Okay, well, you can cut that if you want.
Where?
I like book.
I'm not even going to bother marking that.
No, that means it stays in.
Okay, Barry.
I don't know if I could follow that review.
You have to, because you come afterwards.
I really liked it.
Excellent. Glad to hear it.
Would you like to know more?
Please tell me more. Let's leave my wants out of it.
So, much like Kevin said, or maybe didn't say, we did listen to this book before we started recording. And then I watched the show, and then we listened to it again.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Is this adding to your review?
Review? I am Groot.
Okay.
Review?
I do believe the second listen did help me understand a lot more about this book.
Okay, great.
And I enjoyed it even more.
Excellent. Yes. So, yeah, I had a problem when we first read this book, which was every time I've read this book, I've liked it, but I had a tremendous difficulty remembering it the first few times I read it. And I don't know why, because it's not like it wasn't memorable.
How many times have you read this book?
I think three. I don't know. It's possible an infinite number. Because the second time I read it, I was thinking, oh no, obviously I didn't read it because I don't remember any of this stuff from the first time I read it. And then it's just like, oh, then I get to this part and it's just like, oh, but yeah, I remember the ending of it. Why don't I remember the middle?
Because it was more exciting in the ending.
I guess. And so I read it again, and this time I really liked it. There's a lot of interesting detail, some of which sort of jumps out at me a little bit more because I did a panel with the authors. Sorry, preening gesture.
Yes.
I did a panel with the authors back at BayCon where we discussed tea and just about anything else that popped into our heads at the moment, because I'm not a very good panel moderator. And, they sort of brought up a little bit about the details of how they do they worked out the ecology of this whole station. They actually did a lot of the world building first and then went in and wrote the adventures in it after playing some role-playing games in it. So there's a certain role-playing aspect to all
Is there an RPG for it?
This actually is kind of based on the RPG that they wrote and were playing among themselves.
But did not release.
Did not release as far as I know. Eventually, I'm sure it will come out.
I'm sure they should.
Yes. And so there's a lot of interesting world-building detail that you kind of might miss on the first read where you're sort of thinking, is this a political thriller? Is this a science fiction story? Is this a noir fiction?
It's all of the above.
All of the above. And a dessert topping and a floor wax.
It's a detailed description of how the station works.
But do I get the undercoating for free?
Which was awesome. Yeah, I'll say the first time I read it, I kept confusing Holden and Miller like for three quarters of the book, right? And it's not like when I reread it, like it should have been confusing, but I still kind of have to confuse it, except that I remembered that I used to confuse it, so I was looking out for it.
One of them has a hat.
Yes.
Really? Can you see that when you read the book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do mention hat.
Okay.
I must be missing that edition.
Yes, the one where every letter that has Holden's dialogue has a little hat over it, except I just got that backwards.
Wow. That makes it more funny.
I see that it worked.
So, yes, I believe it's time for one of us to put a hat on, the other of us to speak only the truth, and the third of us to attack the other two.
I'm going to crash the station into Jupiter.
That sounds like a good idea.
All these planets are yours except for this one.
Okay.
I hope it really was Jupiter. It might have been Saturn. I can't remember.
All right. Well, we will return more or less, for we are sci-fi.
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 All right. And we're back. So did anybody have any favorite scenes?
How do you define scene?
It's like the difference between a novella and a novelette.
So you've successfully won my little puzzle, I guess.
I did have favorite parts in the book. I don't have
but
a specific...
But not scenes, because you don't want to be tied down to any particular definition.
Yeah, I'm tied down. I'm free, man. Basically, my favorite parts were like the hallucinations of Julie that he was having, that Milne was having, I guess.
So, the suicidal hallucinations that a dangerously depressed character was having?
Yes. Well, as I said before, I was like, oh, it's like Miranda, you know, from The Tempest. And then I was like, oh, no, it's more like Margaret Atwood's interpretation of that in her book.
When you sent it out, all I could think of was the Miranda reference from Serenity, and I was highly confused.
So
like there's an extra planet running around.
So, I mean, but that would make a certain amount of sense.
Yes.
Right. And so it is
Kevin after all.
Well, because she kind of came up and she would like,
right.
And she was his
thanks
crutch.
To Margaret Atwood. We believe now that Miranda is a fictional, well, yes. It's an imaginary character
from The Tempest. Yes.
And you know, she would show up and kind of comfort him or give him clues and things sort of randomly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, but then at the end, she is there and, you know, he was sort of disappointed that the imaginary one's gone at first.
Yes, the real thing did not live up to his expectations.
But then when she seemed to like it.
Yeah, when she woke up finally and then she's there and then I guess he kind of merged. It was that would be an amusing scene, I guess.
Amusing.
That was sort of the Akira ending.
Yes. Okay, Barry?
So like Kevin, I did enjoy his interactions with Miranda up until the point where he actually encountered the real Miranda and that little fantasy was over. As far as favorite scenes go, I think that, I mean, maybe just the opening of the book. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember really enjoying it.
Well, that was Julie Mao on sort of, you know, she had been thrown into a closet. That's right.
And she was spending time trying to, you know, wait to see if they're going to like let her out. Which
right.
Obviously they weren't. But it did really capture that, you know, fear and you know, desperation of being locked in a closet in a spaceship with no one around.
As we've all, you know, experienced.
Yes.
Would you like to use my closet?
This is a spaceship now.
Well yes, we are traveling through Earth. Space.
Let's see. I think that my favorite scene is probably when they discover Julie's body. I mean,
which time?
Well, that's sort of the part that's interesting to me is that the second time I read it, I remembered this whole, you know, touching merging scene at the end. And then the second time I was just like, did I read this before? Because we found Julie's body and now she's dead. Apparently, gosh, I must have made up that whole ending.
They just stole that whole scene from Psycho.
Right. All scenes in showers are from Psycho. There was never a scene in the shower before then or since.
You're right.
Let's see. My other favorite scene is rather an odd one. So after Miller shoots this psychopathic executive, that scene kind of annoyed me at first, but
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I got to really think it was pretty awesome, especially afterwards when he was explaining what happened, that he had shot the guy because he was starting to believe that the guy should get away with it because his arguments were starting to work.
Right.
And he's like, no, that's wrong.
Yeah.
So I also thought that the parts where they were describing Tycho Station, where, you know, where Fred Johnson's building the Nauvoo, mm-hmm. you know, generation ship was pretty neat, you know, just sort of the magnitude of the station and the ship that they were building. And then on top of that, you know, the business practices of the corporation there. I don't know if I can't remember if it's called Tycho or not, but I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's Tycho Station.
Yeah. Where they sort of had the reputation of, you know, if you need it done right, you know,
right.
This is who you go to, and you don't ask how much it's going to cost, but you do know that it will work perfectly when you're done with it.
So what
I appreciated it at a very deep level.
What happened to that ship at the end? Because they were going to crash it into the station and then it teleports out of the way.
Yeah.
Right.
My understanding is that it kept going. They mention it in one of the later ships as the Mormons are trying desperately to like track it down, and they're trying to sue Tycho Station over its loss.
Okay, that's funny because I was thinking, oh wait, it didn't get blown up. I'm like, so we didn't really destroy it. You can have it back
if you can catch it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it just was. I mean, because it was on automatic basically, and they were all a little distracted by the whole sudden violations of the laws of physics going on in front of them.
Yeah, I will say that the end. And that end part was kind of, it's amazing that he kind of agreed to go along with the whole, like, well, I think Julie's here, so I could talk her into it. but then like they did that kind of crazy thing, like, well, we're going to hack the missiles so that they stop listening to the ground station. And
right.
And they just sort of, you know, kind of like, oh yeah, we'll just do that.
Yeah. It did get a little hand wavy for me at the end there.
Well, for me, it sort of makes a certain amount of sense that this was originally based on a role-playing game universe because
right.
some of it is just like, okay, well, he really got a great role there on, you know, charisma.
Nat 20 on the hack.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes that can just be fun. I mean, I've been listening to this other podcast called The Adventure Zone, which is these three brothers that just play role-playing games with each other. Well, this whole family that just plays role-playing games with each other.
Jesus, I feel cheated on.
Yes, you should. Yes, I listen to podcasts other than ours because otherwise I would go stark staring mad.
I thought we were the most awesome podcast on the planet.
We are, but we must occasionally just visit the lesser podcasts to spread our goodness and raise the overall quality of discourse.
Episode of Touched by an Angel or something.
Exactly.
All those little sickly podcasts running around and
just touched by a podcast.
Yeah, we really should create a whole TV show called Touched by a Podcaster, which is just us going up and touching people no other overall effect other than them shrinking back in horror.
Here is my noodly appendage.
And that was the thing you just said.
Well, we do have the explicit tag on it, so.
Yes, yes. But you were, of course, only making religious references to your Pastafarianism.
Yes,
yes.
Okay. Very good radio. Barry just did an E.T.-style ouch approach on me.
I do have those little
Reese's Pieces.
I'm glad you know that.
Of course I know that. Okay.
Is it part of your
podcast?
Coke-fueled binge?
So, yeah, one of the things that I was kind of interested in was the sort of mixing of genres that's going on here, because it seems to me like we've got Holden, who seems to be he is a space opera captain, where you were saying he's like
Nathan Fillion of Serenity, our modern day captain.
Yeah, he's not quite so jokey as Nathan Fillion, but well, actually, Nathan Fillion's the actor's name.
Yes. Mal
Reynolds.
Mal, yeah.
Yeah, he's a little different from that, but he's always on the idea of, oh, well, if you just tell everyone the truth and broadcast, you can't stop the signal. You broadcast out, you know, the bad thing that happened.
Total transparency.
And everything will work out fine.
After all the wars.
Exactly. And, you know, more or less, he's correct in a certain way, but the way that these problems are getting sorted out is large-scale warfare.
It didn't work out so well for Wash.
Mm, why? What happened to him?
I don't know. I just heard something bad happened. I think he lost a fingertip.
Yeah, that was it. Then we have Joe Miller, the ex-cop and now sort of quasi-private eye type character.
Hard-boiled,
who is, you know, so much a noir character that he actually wears a hat.
Yeah, it was kind of funny how they actually point out, you know, early on that he's like, he thinks he's an awesome cop, and it turns out he's just a drunkard and that he thought he was an awesome cop.
That was a really good scene.
Yeah, it was pretty good, yeah. You know, self-realization scenes are always usually pretty tragic.
Time to go drink a lot more.
You know, because those self-realization scenes, it's like usually they don't end up with the person having like a better idea of who they are, or, you know, a more optimistic version of themselves.
Right. Well, and it was sort of interesting how, as an audience member, I bought into the idea of him being a good cop because he fit the noir sort of archetype so well that I assumed, oh, well, he's a good cop, but he's got an unpopular partner and he's facing a stupid job. And it turns out, no, he's got the unpopular partner because he's the terrible cop and he's gotten this stupid job because he's the cop you assign something to if you don't want it solved.
Right.
And so, yeah, I thought that was interesting. Now, one of the things that I liked only on the third time reading it and after, like, talking to the authors was just how much he had worked out the logistics of food in this. And if you sort of go in with that mindset, they talk a lot about food. Holden has this, like, tremendous love affair with his coffee maker on the new spaceship that he has.
Is it sentient?
Not quite, but you get the impression that whenever the ship blows up, his first thought is, yeah, but is the coffee maker still working? Okay.
Kind of harkens back to our first book where they have like the fancy tea machine.
Yes, exactly. Except I did have a panel discussion with them about their love of coffee and Gail Carriger and my fondness for tea. And it devolved into a discussion a little bit like this one where we talked about where the lizards on a stick come from in various post-nuclear scenarios that people tend to have. But it is sort of interesting that this sort of started out as a fully realized world where they had worked out the economy and they were playing role-playing games in it. And
yet it lacked Chicken Little.
Yeah, well, this is the post-Chicken Little era. One of the reasons that, say, the moons of Jupiter are so necessary is that they can sort of serve as the breadbasket of these colonies because it's got enough gravity to actually grow crops. And that turns out to be, you know, this place where nobody ever thought they would attack it because it's such an important strategic resource that, you know, even though everybody is at war, they are at peace on this one planet. But that's the next book. I shouldn't get into that.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I thought it was interesting too how there was very much from the point of view of, you know, belters or something like that. And it was a very common phrase, you know, it's like, oh, they were born down the well or whatever, which is just like, right. You know, born in a gravity well, like on a planet, and which they sort of looked down on, you know, at this point.
And they had a lot of gestures that were based on having to initially communicate in spacesuits.
Right. Like very large, like hand wavy things for little, like, you know, normally would be just like a shrug or like, you know, wink or something. It's like,
And I have watched the TV show and it actually stays fairly close to the book and I really like it. But unfortunately, since it's actually made by humans, they couldn't actually make the belters as tall and skinny and inhuman looking.
It's like it would just be really expensive and probably just be creepy.
It would be an absolutely terrible idea, but part of my brain is just like, they described her as 6 feet tall and razor thin.
Right. Well, I did think
she looks like a human.
I did think it was interesting too how they basically said the problem is it's really easy to basically just rain down asteroids onto any large planet once you just sort of aim it right.
Right.
And so they're like, you know, if you let enough people with enough technology, you know, basically some rocket engines, they could destroy any planet, you know, without trying very hard. So it's sort of like a dangerous game to start a war with.
Right. But part of this thing coming from a role-playing game is they've put some work into sort of balancing the forces. So the Earth has the most resources. Mars has the most advanced navy because they've been heavily focused on that. And the Belters are basically, you know, they've got just a huge ragtag fleet, but it's a huge ragtag fleet. And as you say, all they have to do is throw enough rocks at a planet and they've got the rocks.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is a pretty common trope in RPG games and also I think in sci-fi books as well, right? Where this sort of power dynamic plays out exactly the way you just described.
Mm-hmm. All the cheese comes from the planet though.
Well, that was, right. That was really interesting was
the cheese economy.
If those guys are listening, what I really would like is just give us a prequel short story, which has the story that Miller was talking, was telling with the cheese smuggling and the naked Australians hiding in a whorehouse and shooting their way out.
Well, and then at the very end, how he basically is like, well, you know, we put it in the lockup or whatever, and it all disappeared that day, and everyone got a big block that they took home. You know, it'd be like millions of dollars in the open market or something.
It's just like, right, and she's like, my God, that was you that had all the cheese?
It's like, we had a cheese shortage for months or whatever it was.
It's like $1 million, you know, grilled cheese sandwich. You're going to pollute that with pickles?
It's like, just eat it straight, raw, pure cheese.
It's like I just mainlined an American single.
Oh, Kraft single?
Jesus. It is one of those days.
Since you used the term mainlined, I was imagining a $1 bill being used for a purpose. Oh,
or like a cheese whiz, like pumped into your veins.
It's a hell of a booster.
Cheese whiz.
Yeah, there's probably black market cheese whiz, but it's not really considered cheese. Well,
when I was younger, we did make our own cheese-filled hot dogs using cheese whiz and a chopstick.
This has been the Cheesecast.
It's been the cheese-filled hot dog podcast.
Yes. One thing that I'm assuming will be explored more and more as we go on is the proto-molecule is kind of an off-screen big bad almost. I mean, yeah, it's it's a MacGuffin that turns people into zombies. Oh no, that's the third genre that this actually is.
Right.
It's also a zombie horror story.
Well, there's also the, you know, bad corporation doing bad things and experimenting on people a lot, like,
right,
you know, like the Alien franchise. And
sure, that's right. So there's a sort of, I guess, cyberpunk. I mean, that's kind of a cyberpunk trope.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, most corporations are pretty evil in the cyberpunk mm-hmm. settings. Yes.
And in real life. And,
well, they're not evil. They're profit driven.
Right. That's just a side effect.
Makes them pure. You know exactly what they're going to do every time.
And step three is profit.
Yes. Also step one and two.
Yes. If you could profit off of even the intermediary steps, it's also good.
So part of our regular question, was there tea? I do remember them having rooibos, quote unquote, tea. They called it tea. And the thing that annoys me is I've talked to these guys. These guys actually know a thing or two about tea.
Maybe that's why they didn't include it.
Yes. But they do like their coffee a bit more. And they had worked out the coffee economy to a terrifying degree. So everybody had bulbs of coffee. And that is another interesting thing, is that I find that in most spacecraft with zero-G environments, the authors seem to be going for bulbs of coffee rather than bulbs of tea.
I hadn't noticed, but I also don't, you know, have that same level of, you know.
He's making hand gestures.
Intimacy with my tea, so, like you.
Then the next question is, who would we want to be on the station? And based on our discussion, I was a little unclear, but now I've figured out who I want to be. I want to be the guy who sells cheese.
You want to be the cheese man?
I want to have a cheese shop, and it's going to be all Monty Python. And we won't actually have any cheese.
You just have one block, and then you can just drive the price up.
Yes, exactly.
Like, this is all we have.
Right. But anytime that, you know, we've actually sold the last bit, then I'm going to do the entire Monty Python cheese shop routine until somebody shoots me.
How would you resist, you know, just taking little nibbles of the cheese block? And
that's where my plan falls apart, you see. I wouldn't want to get high on my own supply.
It's like you have to chalk it up to mouse loss.
Exactly.
Like every time I look away, the little mouse is over there nibbling.
Yes. So what would you guys like to be in this universe? I think Kevin would like to be one of the proto-zombies.
Yes, I'll be proto-Julie, the leader of the proto-zombies that runs the planet around wherever you want.
But then she betrays her own, you know, proto-zombie people.
Well, she just controls them. It's different.
Well, and we don't really know what happens to them in the end. We don't necessarily
They build crystal towers on...
Right.
What was it, Venus or something?
Yes, and still they stand tall. Uh-huh. And maybe they've seen us and welcome us home. Barry?
Look forward to worshiping our future proto-zombie overlords. Mm,
so many light years to go.
Yeah, it might be sooner than you might think.
Maybe you would want to be one of the psychopathic scientists?
Oh, no, no. I actually want to be Fred Johnson.
Yes. The butcher of Anderson Station.
Yes. Not only that, but also now the current leader of Tyco Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, hey, if you need something built, you need it done right.
Don't ask how much it costs.
That's not material.
If you have to ask, then you don't want it that much.
If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
Exactly.
Okay. Do we have anything else we wanted to talk about?
I did like these spaceships, you know, being not World War II biplanes, but, you know, some kind of physics-based
spaceships. Yes, it is novel.
I mean, they did use sort of like, you know, future physics and, you know, with warp drive or whatever it was. But
did they actually have an FTL drive?
I don't think it was FTL, but I think it was like extreme acceleration, which is why they had the, you know, the couches with the drugs and everything. And
right, that was actually pretty interesting.
And it wasn't pleasant either.
No, yeah. Though I'm sure somebody out there was actually addicted to it.
Right, and then they said how like afterwards they were recovering, and or like when they were exposed to all that radiation, were doing the thing, and then it's like you got to take these meds every day for the rest of your life. Which he's like, ha ha, that's a good joke because that's going to be today, like in that part of the book anyway.
Exactly. Well,
also, they had to trick the ship's AI, medical AI.
Oh, that was awesome. Kept on flipping into hospice mode.
Yeah, like we just had to turn that off.
Yeah, it was like a military unit. So they said it kept just injecting with morphine and just saying, okay, you can go to sleep now. They're like, overwrite. No, this one doesn't look so good. Damn it. It's an officer or something. Like, okay.
All right. Well, I think that this discussion has been the beginnings of the protomolecule gradually taking over our brains. So,
yeah, that makes sense.
Until we are all zombies and can communicate with you directly mind to mind or something, we have been sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Sci-fi.